Howdy, everybody. Welcome back to the Emerald Archer podcast, a DC Green Arrow fan podcast. I'm Ed Moore.
And I'm Nick.
Heads up here at the top of the show. This is a spoiler podcast, so we're going to talk about the different things that go on in the books. Might not be a big deal for the two world's finest books that we have on tap, issues 101 and 102. Those came out in 59. Now, the third book is the Green Arrow that came out the first week of January.
Most recent.
So if you guys listening are like me, I get my books once a month, and that shipment I should get the early part of next week, which would have that book in it. So when we get to Green Arrow, we'll definitely give you a heads up that it's coming that way. If you don't want to listen and be spoiled on anything, you can fast forward. Don't want you to just turn it off, because we've got other good stuff after that. But
we have all kinds of good stuff before, after, during.
That way you know when that comes up. So, Nick, anything you want to add here before we get into the books?
The only thing I was thinking about is that this intro that you do for every show, mm-hmm. It sounds pretty much the same every time.
It's close, because it's just the same information and no flourishes or bells and whistles.
Right.
Just this is this and that's that. And
I'm Ed. This is Nick. Thanks. This is a fan podcast. Let's go.
Yeah. I don't know if I've mentioned DC Comics Green Arrow too much. I think I've just said Green Arrow.
Yeah. No. DC. Fan based, I think.
Do I usually say DC Comics?
DC is in there, but okay. I'm not exactly sure where.
Okay, yeah, I don't know that there's like really a Green Arrow based on anything else, but there might be.
There could be. Never know. I do hear that there's a podcast for everything out there.
Well, not all comic book kind of stuff.
No.
If I had time, I'd have 40 or 50 podcasts.
You'd be a professional podcaster.
Probably once a week, I'm like, oh man, I wonder if somebody's doing a podcast on this. No.
I'll do one.
I wish, but. Okay, so the first book we've got on tap today, three books. We usually try to do three books each show. The first one is the 1941 volume of World's Finest, issue 101, like I said. That came out in May of 1959, and we're going to look at the third story titled Battle of the Useless Inventions. It was scripted, apparently, by Mr. Ed Herron, with inks and pencils by Lee Elias.
Oh, okay. I got everything working now. Never mind. So,
all right.
That's it.
So you want to tell us about this story, or you want me to?
Yeah. Okay, so for this issue, it starts out with the splash page of Green Arrow and Speedy getting trapped by a giant insect or a giant spider shooting a steel web on them. And of course, Speedy is able to tell all this just by his Speedy instincts.
Speedy stinks?
His Speedy stinks.
I don't know.
That's a little weird sounding.
It is weird. I wish that the bug had been like the bad guy, because that's a pretty tough looking bug.
Yeah,
there.
It really is. That's nasty looking.
Yeah, it's pretty cool looking.
Okay, so it goes to the story. We've got an unknown man.
Just a professor or just an inventor. We don't even know that he's a professor.
No, okay. The colonel is at this inventor professor dude's house in a government office looking at a blackout saucer which turns daylight into darkness. Well, the inventor is pretty much telling the colonel the truth. You know, this is a really pointless invention. I don't know why I have it. And the colonel's pretty much saying, it's pointless.
He's agreeing.
Well, it is pointless.
You're
so
right.
I'll take it for $50,000.
No. That's a guy outside. That's a different dude.
No, it's not.
Yeah. The dude is presenting it to the colonel. The colonel says, I don't want it. But when the dude goes outside, because he's been rebuffed.
He's getting kicked out. So the other guy is
somebody else
by,
comes up
okay,
and says, well,
my bad. That makes sense.
You know, I'll take it since they don't want it.
So the army doesn't want it. But this guy comes over and says, I'll take it for whatever price you're willing to ask.
And of course, this dude that's buying it is the most upstanding citizen-looking kind of dude.
Right,
He's, you know, you're like, sure, here, you can buy it. You know,
that's not strange.
he's got a jacket and a hat on. He's got a,
He's got the big square jaw.
what do they call the thing?
Ascot.
Ascot, yes. Freddy wore them all the time in
Yes,
Scooby.
Scooby-Doo.
He's got an ascot on. Yeah, he's got a big, underbite square jaw. Makes his mouth look wet. Yeah, so
Yeah.
nothing suspicious or, you know, out of the ordinary looking about him.
No.
I'll sell you my invention. Okay, anyway.
And so anyway, they trade invention for money. You know, he goes on his way. He says, "Oh, it's useless to you, but for me, it'll be very practical." And of course, in his mind, he's doing his evil laugh.
And this isn't the first guy. He says he makes it his
Yes,
business
it's a
to buy it.
business buying up inventions that nobody else wants.
So.
So it goes to Oliver and Roy. They're in the penthouse.
The Arrow apartment.
Yeah, the Arrow apartment. And Speedy points out the window, notices that the Arrow signal is there, so they hop in the Green Arrow car, and they go downtown, and they notice something very out of the ordinary, the fact that there's a giant artificial moon in the middle of the street. So they're investigating, you know, why is it here? What is it doing? When it starts to shoot this mysterious green gas into a jewelry store, turns out to be knockout gas, with a bunch of goons using the moon as their
Yeah,
getaway,
as their vehicle,
yeah,
I guess
their
they.
transportation.
Yeah, we didn't see it yet fly or anything. It was just kind of hovering
Yeah,
there in
just
the
kind of
street.
there. So, Green Arrow is goofing around. I've got gas of my own. So him and Speedy gas the moon with their smoke arrows.
They had Mexican that night.
Yeah, that's bad Indian food.
Yeah. Can I point something else out here?
Go
The page before,
ahead.
where the moon is sitting in front of the jewelry
Are
store,
you gonna
guessing it.
comment on the sound it makes?
No.
Okay. It's a shwee.
Shwee! That is kind of funny. But think about how big this moon is, okay? First of all, up above, we see that it, like, takes up the whole street, more or less.
Right.
You see these people running, and you see their car in comparison. It's pretty darn big.
It is a big one.
Now, in the next panel, it looks a little bit smaller, but the next panel, you see three guys running out of it, and you see part of the curve of it to kind of give you an idea of how big it is.
Right.
With all that in mind, how wide is that daggone sidewalk that it's over top of in that panel
You
over here?
know, I didn't think about that. That
That.
sidewalk is huge.
You know, we don't have sidewalks that big around here.
That's just a that's like an interstate that people can walk on, apparently.
I thought that was funny that they, you know, when they drew that picture, that they drew it completely over top the sidewalk
Yeah.
rather than just scrunching the
Pointing
sidewalk up over
right.
here. Yeah, but I was like, dag, if that moon is that big and that, folks, if you can't see that, this sidewalk's probably.
Well, you say that these guys are 5 to 6 feet tall on average, you know.
Yeah, they're probably, this sidewalk is probably 35, maybe 40 feet wide.
Right. 'Cause the well, yeah.
You know, which I think is wider than the normal street. I think the street is usually about 10 to 12 feet wide per half.
So you've got 3 to 4 streets kind of right there for
Yeah, so
people to
the
walk on.
sidewalk on the one side is as big as our streets around here.
Yeah.
So who knows how big the street and the other sidewalk
Well, I noticed
it's
that in the street there, when Green Arrow and Speedy were in their car, you would think because of the size of that car that you would already be able to see the sidewalk on the other side. But that's a pretty big street there too.
Yeah, it is because there's definitely room on one side for another car, and then this side near the sidewalk, maybe just a little bit more room you'd need for parked cars.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's...
But then on that side, you have a normal-sized sidewalk.
It's huge. So, okay, those are just some...
No, I could have sworn you were going to comment on the sound it was making.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, back to where I was.
Right, they'd had Mexican,
and they were
using their own gas.
They were gassing the moon, and, of course, the bandits are coming back out of the jewelry store, opening up the door to the moon, realizing that all this gas is coming out, and it's so bad that they can't see. that was good. Green Arrow and Speedy are like, yes, we did. Are you still laughing over there?
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking, yeah, I've been around gas that was so bad I couldn't see, too.
Okay. They think they've done a good job, and the next thing they know, they get them and the police. Okay, I know it wasn't that funny. Come on.
Oh, it was to me. Sorry.
They're thinking they did a good job, but they realize that them and the police are starting to get caught under a steel cobweb from the giant insect we saw earlier in the splash page. After they've been captured, it basically looks like curved jail cells. You know, there's no give way because the tension is so much on it. They see the moon just take off in the distance, and Green Arrow comes to the conclusion that the spider and the moon are probably in the same league. So he pulls out an acetylene torch and is thinking, well, maybe if I cut one of the strands that the tension on the steel web will break because it's electrically controlled and we can get out. Well, of course, because we're working with 7 to 8 pages, that turns out to be right.
Works right away.
There you go. They use the net that's still being spun by the spider to climb up to the spider and grab its hole. I know. I can't describe it any other way.
It's the part of the body where the net had dropped out of, but it just looks like a big hole in the spider with a ring or a lip around it that they can hold on to. So
the hole has lips.
It's like, you know, here's this vehicle, and it has a big hole in its body
right, not a design flaw.
You know, so apparently you can't go in water with it.
No.
If it flies, you can't go very high.
No, you can't go into space. It's not space-worthy.
So.
I bet their heating bill is pretty high. Okay, yep. I'm just going to go on. They're holding on to the spider. They figured that it's going to take them to their evil hideout. You know, that turns out to be right. And you see Underbite here. Watching them on a TV saying, well, I've been watching them on the TV this whole time, so let's just plan around this and get them. Well, the spider is walking from the water, out of the water.
Yeah, I guess it, I mean, it walked to, you know, let's say this is an island.
Mm-hmm.
The water wasn't deep enough that it had to go under, because these guys are just hanging on to the bottom.
Maybe it was doing a double doggy paddle?
I don't know. I mean, they would have had to stay up above the water because they can't breathe underneath it. I mean, they can if they have.
They probably have the bubble or whatever.
But they didn't show any of that.
No. 7 pages.
Well, I mean.
Anyway, they get to the secret hideout where you see the moon sitting there. And they're starting to climb down where Underbite here is saying, don't do anything you're going to regret because we have our guns trained on you. And he says, I'll be happy to show you around so you can see my pointless inventions that I have purchased. So he does. You see model versions of the moon, the spider, what looks like the top of a gumball machine with kind of like two blades on top.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one that looks like a carousel, and there's one that looks like a...
Well, the carousel is the darkness thing.
Is that what... On the
blackout
frame,
saucer.
Is that it? On the left frame?
Yeah.
It looks a little different, but okay. That's the blackout saucer, but we don't really know what that one is. It kind of looks like a futuristic fire hydrant to me.
Yeah, kind of.
So, he's saying, what they are as he's pointing at them. You know, these are gonna help me steal stuff, be a better criminal. This blackout saucer can do this and that, and the boomerang can destroy and attract opposing aircrafts, which you would think another person would find useful, like the army or something.
You would think, huh?
But Green Arrow is formulating a plan in his mind. He says, what a surprise. Wait. He wants to go to the control board of the full-size saucer.
He's moving over to the controls of the real life-size blackout light.
So he goes over there. He, I guess, just stabs it with an electro arrow, and it turns out the light. They do their regular Green Arrow and Speedy thing, formulate a plan, get out, take their grenade arrow and shoot it through the magnetic boomerang, which was the gumball machine I said with the blades on top. I don't know how that's a boomerang.
Right.
But they shoot a grenade arrow in it, and it breaks through, and it knocks the gyroscope that the boomerang uses for balance, off balance, makes it spin out of control, destroy crap. Underbite here is thinking, well, crap, we just lost and we're definitely going to prison. And it busts through their secret hideout and into the ocean, and everything he's worked for just is destroyed in about 2 minutes. And Green Arrow do the regular superhero thing and put their hands on their waist and say, well, we won.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and then the ironic part is they're under the steel net now.
Ha 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 ha.
Not metaphorically.
No.
But physically.
Really.
Yes.
Not metaphorically.
All right.
All righty. The next issue we've got up is the 1941 volume of World's Finest. The next issue 102. And that came out in June of 1959. We're looking at the third story, being the Green Arrow story in this one, titled Case of the Camouflage King. And it also was scripted by Ed Herron with pencils and inks by Mr. Lee Elias.
I like coffee.
Coffee is good.
You know what else is good?
Bacon?
Yeah. Okay. So am I doing this one? Or?
Well, I can do it if whatever.
You gonna do? Can I do this one and you do the new one?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Cool.
So, yes, as he said, this one is called The Case of the Camouflage King. The splash page is Arrow and Speedy are both covered in, I'm guessing, white paint, and then they're blending into white tents at a circus. They can't see each other, so it's kind of like they're invisible. And three goons are getting away covered in multicolored paint.
Yeah, like they were camouflaged for something else. I don't know.
A quilt.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. So the story starts, we're in a museum, and we see two police officers pointing over at a picture, noticing that it's starting to roll itself up. I'm sorry, not a picture, a painting. There's a difference. It's starting to roll itself up. Being taken by a ghost or something. And of course you realize it's guys covered in paint blending in with their background. Well, a guy is behind a pole and he says, "You can't see me, but you can see my gun." And my first instinct is, well, something's got to be sitting there holding the gun, so I'm pretty sure if I shoot right there, I could probably get you.
Just above the gun.
Right.
But they didn't have a chance, I guess, to pull their gun, so they... By the time they pulled it out, I guess he could shoot them.
Right.
So,
he's pointing their gun at the security guards, and I'm guessing a janitor or...
Yep, or...
An attendant. There we go.
Yeah.
An attendant is carrying a statue, I'm guessing, changing out the exhibits, and he says... Well, I see the security guards over there with their hands up, and I hear a mysterious voice. I better call for help and sound the alarm. So he does that. Oliver and Speedy are in their arrow apartment. And Speedy points out the arrow signal that's outside because Oliver obviously never sees it until Speedy says something.
Yeah, that's true. It's always Speedy that sees the.
I didn't know if you were looking out the window, but look over there. It's the signal, you know?
Yeah, I've never noticed that, but he's always the one that's like, hey, Green Arrow, Oliver, look.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
You know, they get their get up on arrows and everything, hop in the arrow car, go down to the museum where the two guards that we saw earlier tell them that the crooks took $50,000 worth of paintings, which I don't know how much that would be worth now.
No, but notice that's how much the professor's invention was in the
$50,000
story before.
Has to make a
it, I guess that's a
profit or something.
That's a good solid amount of too much money. $50,000.
Right.
That's
well, you know what else I haven't seen in a while? Some gold bullion.
Okay.
I haven't seen that in a while.
Oh, that they're stealing or
stealing,
whatever.
It's paintings and jewels and
it's
blah.
Art stuff now,
right.
and stuff. I don't know. Maybe here before too long we'll get back. Maybe those are the things they use in World's Finest, and the gold bullion is in Adventure Comics.
There we go.
Maybe that's...
Because I think this paintings going on as we're merging into the 60s and people are starting to get too...
Artsy?
Yeah.
Artsy.
No, okay. Not artsy, just artsy.
Okay.
Yeah, so he says you can't... the police officers say you can't see him, but they see a gunshot. So the Green Arrow team is just... spraying just regular arrows at where they saw the gunfire
trying
from.
To hit something. I wonder what kind of arrows they're using.
I thought they would just be regular arrows, because not like, here's a grenade arrow, smoke arrow, acetylene arrow, you
then
know.
Then they're liable to kill somebody if it's a regular arrow.
I know, but...
I don't
okay.
know. I don't know what you would use, but I mean...
For legal purposes, we'll say boxing glove arrows.
Or just the blunt arrows that just have a big metal tip on them that just...
Right, like, it just hurts.
Knock people out or something. Yeah, okay.
Okay, so they realize that they're obviously not going to hit anything. They look over to the side and see a yellow car driving away, which turns into dark green, which then turns into the green of the foliage, which I don't know about you, but I can obviously see that car. I guess it's a little bit different in person.
Yeah, but look what else happened. The land in the foreground and the road changed each time.
Okay,
also.
So it goes from dirt road and foliage to paved road with dirt and foliage to dirt road and foliage.
Yeah. So everything is camouflaging around the car.
Even
including
the sky
car.
In this one.
The
I didn't
sky
see
changes
that, right?
Color. Yeah. So I don't
okay.
know what's going on. They're traveling through different dimensions or something.
Like I said, we're getting closer to 60s when these comics were made and these writers were doing something.
Doing shrooms? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, they're not doing shrooms.
They were like tripping.
They're doing that giggly herb.
They were hitting that acid right before
there
they
go.
Were coloring things.
Can I have those porcelain frogs?
Listening, that's it. Talking porcelain frogs. Listening to Strawberry Alarm Clock. Incense, peppermints.
Is that a song from back then?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's Strawberry Alarm Clock's the name of the group.
What's the name of the song?
Incense, peppermints.
That makes sense. Anyway.
I've got that if you want to listen to it later.
We can do that later.
Okay.
Yes, so Speedy. Okay, people, you can't see this right now, but there's some dancing going on over here.
I'm singing me some Strawberry Alarm Clock, man. Now they're in my head.
Okay, well... Can I just go on?
Yeah, don't pay any attention to me.
I can't help it. You're a distraction.
All right, go. I'll,
I'm trying to work here.
It's cool. It's cool. Yeah, okay. Is that what you call it? Okay.
Okay. Green Arrow and Speedy realize that they've got some kind of camouflage thing going on after all that they've been through. They've finally realized it. It cuts to the criminals having these expensive paintings just rolled up in their hands.
I think that's one of the ways that you can transport them.
But that...
But it rolls, and so it doesn't break the paint. It rolls.
That
I mean,
would
you,
break the paint,
you
though.
You can't fold it.
No, but
apparently
if you
not.
Roll it, wouldn't it break it just a lot more?
I've seen, like in movies and TV shows, whenever they'll do things like somebody's going to steal the big painting and they replace it or something, the original they'll have like in a tube stored away somewhere.
Right.
That's how they store these paintings sometimes too, because maybe they don't have the space to store everything in nice big frames. Or
right.
Something. They'll store them in tubes, and then however they take them out of the tube and put them in the frame. I don't know how they do that without hurting the picture, but so.
Well, it's like in National Treasure, they were handling the Declaration of Independence, and for some reason, I doubt this is more likely to happen, but that one was rolled up too, and they kept it in a plastic tube, in a metal tube with a shoulder strap, and that's how they carried it around, like from the bad guys and everything. But I thought that just because, you know, it was so old that they would go dust, you know, they'd roll it up and just...
Or the paint would, like, flake off
yeah,
of it.
Yeah,
something
like that, you know, yeah. It'd mess it up, you know.
Yeah.
Mona Lisa might have a smile by the done you're rolling that painting up.
Yeah, or you'd be able to see what's underneath it because it's
right.
been rolled up and... That outer layer has all come off now. You shake it off.
You can see the outline of what he was going to paint. You can see a sketch beforehand. So he hands over the, quote, 50 G's worth of paintings to this ha-haw French-looking man.
Yeah,
with the beret.
The French pencil mustache and the beret, yeah.
And the like the rich man cigarette with the big stick.
Yeah, it's got a long holder with the cigarette on the end
right.
of it. Yeah.
So, he says...
I liked your French impression there, by the way, too.
With the haw?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, of course, since his little goons don't know how the guns work yet, he says, well, thank you for the paintings, but now I'm going to show you how the guns work so you can camouflage yourself. So he picks up this statue and he sprays it on this conveniently placed abstract painting.
Yeah,
just
it's got all
him.
The colors.
Yeah, and he sprays it with his chemical paint, and I have no idea how it works.
No. He just says, but each paint cartridge spins around at your slightest touch, spraying yourself or a target with any color or design you want. So I guess...
Does it read your mind?
Who knows?
Is it a Doctor Who paint gun or something? No?
I don't think so. Although he was around, but...
What, Doctor Who?
Mm-hmm.
The Doctor.
59? Well, no, maybe not yet. Early 60s, 61.
That sounds right. I don't think 50s is right.
Yeah, I don't think 59. That might be a little before the Doctor's time. Although he has been in the 50s, I'm sure.
Probably. He's probably been everywhere by now, you know.
Or every win, in this case.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, we don't know if you have to tell it what color and how much to do, or if there's some sort of sensor in the gun.
Red.
Yeah, really. He just sprays it, and it sprays in the correct pattern. That's all we see that they have drawn here. So
very, very accurately, too.
That's all we know, because then he completely holds up the statue in front of the painting, and honestly, unless you knew, you really can't see it. You can
right.
see the outline of the statue, but the whoever colored this just colored straight through that part of the drawing.
Well, if you perception-wise... It would just look like that he's holding his hand up to look like he's holding a knight and the horse, the statue.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like it could be like drawn in the painting, and he's doing that for like an illusion, you know?
Yeah. So it works. The gun works.
Yeah.
I guess that's all that matters. We don't need to really worry about why.
It just does.
Or how.
Yeah. So yeah. He says he was asking about Green Arrow. Is he around? Of course, the goon's like, yeah, but we made him look stupid. He, the head, having some throat chiller issues here. He says that he better come tomorrow to the circus just to make sure that Green Arrow doesn't do anything, and he'll show him a special surprise. And it cuts to Green Arrow's lair, where Green Arrow is like showing Speedy that he can also camouflage his hand into a red and white checkerboard background. But something tells me he sat there and hand-painted that.
Yeah, he did, because you see the paint cans
yeah.
and the brush here. So he figured out where in the pattern he wanted to paint his hand, and he painted his hand with that same pattern and just held it up there. And if you stand far enough back...
Right. Okay. Anyway, Speedy's over here kissing some butt. And it skips over to Green Arrow washing his hand off, saying, we know how they're doing this camouflage now. Because I doubt even in the 50s they had another way of camouflaging except for painting what they wanted to camouflage.
I guess so. I mean, that's, you know.
All right, so now we're the next day at the circus where the ringmaster, is that right? I didn't know what that was called. He's being told by his worker
Yeah, just a circus flunky there.
that someone's stealing money from the admissions booth. And the ringmaster says, "Well, let me just pull up my firing signal cane and hold it up into the air and shoot a signal to signal the police."
I think probably what he's signaling is other people in the circus, because it doesn't say who. It's just a signal cane.
No. Says so that's a signal for the law
Does it?
on
Okay.
the next
Okay.
page. So anyway, he shoots his signal cane and he's signaling the law, but who needs the law when you have Green Arrow and Speedy pulling up to your circus?
They are the law.
They are. So, they get out of the car, he explains the situation, but I don't want to call them the camouflage game, I want to call them the Invisi Dudes, but that's just what keeps popping into my
That
mind.
works.
The Invisi Dudes pull out their guns and shoot both Speedy and Green Arrow, and cover them in white. And now they're on white backdrop tents from the circus, which is what we saw on the splash page. We see the Invisi Dudes running away with a bag full of loot, which I don't know how much money would be in a circus admissions box anyway.
Probably several $1,000 for the whole day.
Oh, yeah.
They took the day's receipts. So yeah, probably. I don't think it'd be the $50,000 they seem to really
No.
like,
But
but
they've already made the $50,000 from that invention, so now all this is just gravy.
thousands,
Yeah.
yeah, probably that's.
So, spray them with white, but they now Speedy and Green Arrow don't know where each other are. They don't want to shoot arrows because they might hurt each
They
other.
might hit somebody
Right.
like they did before, just
Just
blindly
spraying
shooting
blindly at,
arrows.
yep.
And, okay.
But that's what they do. They kind of just spray arrows and it goes over their heads, but that's the Midnight Arrows, which just sprays black liquid, I guess ink.
Ink or black paint, I
Yeah,
mean,
something like
but,
that.
you
And it coats the Invisi
know.
Dudes, so I guess they're visible, but I thought they were pretty, like, out there anyway.
Well, I guess depending on what angle you were looking at it from,
Yeah, really.
you know.
He might be a running rainbow.
Yeah.
So they can now see them because of the paint or ink. Green Arrow shoots a bolo arrow, and Speedy shoots a net arrow right after. So they catch him, wrap him up, and give him to the police. And, they win.
And here finally there's and I guess this is just a name that Green Arrow just coined, the Camouflage King. But you notice when they were introduced way back, he didn't have a name. They didn't refer
Yeah, I
to him
did.
by name.
Yeah, I did. Give me a second.
But nobody said it. I mean, the text might have said it, but nobody called him that or anything. And he didn't refer to himself that
Yeah, I
way.
did. His goons referred to him as that.
Camouflage King?
It's somewhere here. Ha ha! You've sure earned your moniker, boss. The Camouflage King.
Okay. Touche. Touche. Touchy.
Touchy.
Which goes with the ha
Ha ha! Touche.
ha. So, all right. So now the third and final issue for discussion today is the current volume of Green Arrow, issue 5. So all of those of you that have not read this, probably, let's look at this, 30 minutes. So probably about a 20-minute go through of this story, and then we'll be on to the contact information, everything like that at the end. So if you need to not hear this, this is where it's starting. So on the cover here, we've got, first of all, this is a new 52 issue. Anybody that follows comics knows that basically DC Comics completely rebooted everything of their regular line. Doesn't necessarily affect some of their other smaller lines, but this is the fifth, January's the fifth month of that reboot, so the new 52 Green Arrow here. Now, Nick and I noticed something interesting on the cover. Well, the cover has this big gray creature with no eyeballs crashing through something, getting at Green Arrow, who has hit him 9 or 10 times with regular arrows, and they're sticking out of different portions of his body, and he's not going down any.
He looks like a combination of an undead Hulk and the guy in the new Hulk movie that tries to become the Hulk and beats him up.
Abomination.
There we go. And he kind of looks like that with the spine ridge.
Yeah, on his back. All
right.
You notice anything funky about his hand?
Which one?
The gray dude.
Which one? Which hand?
The hand extended down by Green Arrow.
It looks solid.
Does it look like there are 5 fingers on it?
Yeah, but they're not in hand form.
Rather than four fingers and a thumb, to me it looked like it was just 5 fingers.
Because it doesn't look like they're separated like ours. It's like you have a circular palm and they're just kind of like 5 around. I'm thinking that the one that you can't see his nail on is his thumb.
Thumb, but it doesn't look like a thumb. It looks like a finger.
It does.
So
I didn't notice that.
On the cover here it says Keith Giffen and Dan Jurgens, who would have done the co-plotting. Keith Giffen and Jurgens, what?
Go ahead. You're good. I thought you were going to read what it said.
Oh. And then Dan Jurgens was doing layouts with George Perez doing finishes, Perez.
Perez.
Yeah, there's an inflection
with the
over the first
accent
E.
mark.
See it there?
Okay. I learned that in Spanish.
Yes, you're taking Spanish. So, that's what it says on the cover, which is what the previous issue was. Now, inside, it has Keith Giffen and Dan Jurgens co-plotting, Keith Giffen writing, Dan Jurgens doing layouts with Ray McCarthy doing finishes. And then underneath that, it says the cover is by Jason Fabok, Ryan Wynn, and Alan Pasalacqua.
That's a good pronunciation.
So, I'm not sure who is doing what.
Well,
my little bit of knowledge tells me that the cover, George Perez was involved in this cover. Now, I can't necessarily tell if he did inks or, you know, finishes. Well, actually, here in the background of the cover, it has the names that are listed, that I listed before, being Farrakh, or Fabok, Wynn, and Pasalacqua.
Mm-hmm.
They have their initials on there. So,
where?
On the structure, up above his hand,
oh,
up above
there
the
it is.
Arrow.
Yeah,
sticking.
You're right. I see that.
I've been looking. Usually they're on the cover somewhere, and I found them as I was talking. So, Perez didn't have anything to do with this, unless he did, and he just wasn't credited, which is entirely possible. Maybe he did part of it, didn't finish, and
right.
Had to turn it over. And so I don't know all of these names. Giffen and Jurgens were involved. Whether or not Perez was involved anywhere, I don't know.
And who was it that did the layout, like the sketches first before adding the color?
Well, it would have been Dan Jurgens would have sketched it, and then the previous issue would have been George Perez.
But this guy's
this
Ray McCarthy.
This issue would have been Ray McCarthy, who would have done like inks or
right.
finish. Like Jurgens would have just done real quick sketches of what he thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then McCarthy would have finished those and then filled in any background stuff, like buildings and stuff
is
like that.
Is Jurgens so. The usual?
He's been on it for several issues now.
Because I just noticed on the first page with Blood Rose that, like I told you, the art's just way different. Those first three, well, not the top one, but the next three panels.
It does look
like she's got a very manly kind of
face
build,
structure,
squareness.
Shape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very picky about, like, I can notice art styles from one issue to another.
Sure.
I've done it with the World's Finest and the Adventure Comics.
That, you know, that just means you're paying attention. That's good stuff. All right. So, the cover, Green Arrow is being attacked by this thing, and apparently this thing is taking a lot of damage and not really being slowed up, it doesn't look like. So,
no.
We go to the start of the story, and we're on the waterfront. We see one of those big cargo container rectangle things.
Their base of operations.
That you see all the time, the cargo containers. That's all I know to call them.
Shipping crates.
Shipping crates. And Rose Red.
Blood Rose.
Rose Red is a Cinderella. Yeah. Blood Rose and this other gray dude that's been with her is in here. Now, on the cover.
No, we know what he's called. It said that in the first issue that they introduced
she
him.
She called him Midas?
Midas,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so she and Midas are in this together, in this container. And it, apparently it's where they're, like, hanging out, because there's a cot here that she goes to sleep on after having recently just come back from the attack on Green Arrow, where she ripped off the entire
dock
on the back of the building and threw at him and
yeah.
whatever. So she's... recovering, because he got her in the shoulder with an arrow, and her shoulders, Midas is bandaging her shoulder, not burning her or oozing all over the place.
No.
Notice
look kind of like solid there.
Yeah, so wonder if he can turn it on and off.
Maybe it has to do with emotions?
Maybe. And they're talking, and there's some sort of emotional, like, real emotional thing between them, the way that they're talking. It's been kind of hinted at before that they have some sort of emotional connection, like maybe brother sister, but now I'm thinking that it's more like man and wife,
right?
Formerly, before whatever happened to him,
exes.
Maybe or something,
yeah,
something like that. So, next we see Green Arrow after patrolling all night. He's popping back into his offices there at Q Corps in Seattle, which also Q Corps is right near the waterfront, so.
Mm-hmm.
All of this has been happening in close proximity to each other.
Proximally.
He runs through the window. He gets into his office from the outside through the window, and he's trying to change because it's time for him to be Oliver Queen. And while he's doing this,
Adrian,
his
assistant
busts in on him without announcing herself or anything. He's left instructions that he's not to be disturbed, which probably he did way before he just now got in. That
mm-hmm.
way nobody can come in
right.
and be waiting for him when he busts in. So he's managing to change just in time as she comes in. She catches him in his skivvies, but they just blow that off because apparently it's happened before. Who knows? He comes in after exercising. Maybe he has a shower in his
right.
office or something. So whatever. So she's telling him that... dude, Emerson is doing some funky things with the running of the company and how Oliver can interact with it. Basically, Emerson is trying to oust...
He's just trying to get rid of him.
Oliver.
Yeah.
And what he has done is he has given Adrian... Emerson has given Adrian, who is Oliver's assistant, the ability to veto anything Oliver wants to do.
Right.
So,
which is a lot of power for.
Well, it's a lot of power, but she's on Oliver's side to begin with.
Right.
She's his assistant.
So
I mean,
she'll probably just ask him, "So, what do you want to do?" And I'll tell him this.
Or she's like, to me, it seems like she's almost like his conscience, even though he's not doing anything bad
mm-hmm.
to need a conscience. He's not even there,
right?
Because he's Green Arrow. So she's like
taking his.
If you were really in charge, this is how. Somebody who was really in charge would do it.
Right.
Kind of conscience. Like his business conscience. Is that's my read on what she is anyways.
Yeah.
We also see... help me with names here. Jax is his weapon maker. And...
Naomi.
Naomi is his... like his eyes and ears. They're talking because... Of course, they were helping him out while he was on patrol, and he's just finishing his patrol. So then we finish over and we flip over and we see them kind of finish their shift too as they're finishing up everything, all the information that he did and keeping track with him and talking to him and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of in their secret control room talking about Blood Red, talking about Adrian.
Blood Rose.
I'm going to have to write that down. And you know, so you're basically what you're getting is more information on each of the different story beats here, all coming together via these two kind of in their back control room.
Is that a shout out right there? Do you think Wonder Woman's breasts are real?
Because
I read that and he said, "Right, I'm gone," and I don't know how that.
She's trying to get rid of him.
But how does that do anything?
Well. Right off the bat, if she starts talking about a woman's boobs and dude is gay, he just would not be interested in the conversation, would he?
No.
So maybe that's it. Maybe he is, they're playing him as being very, very naive and just not comfortable talking about women's boobs.
He's innocent.
And so he runs out because of that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but basically what it is, I think, is she's bringing up a topic she knows he doesn't want to mess with to help,
right,
help get him out the door.
Maybe she's also gay.
Could be, could be. But that's a pretty funny question, I think, just out of the blue.
What?
Do you think Wonder Woman's breasts are too big?
He's like, he goes, actually.
Or real, I'm sorry.
He goes, I'm actually starting to get a real vibe, or a real comfort zone vibe going on here. And she goes, oh, so she does that to make him uncomfortable.
Could, okay, could be.
Because he says, I'm starting to get a real comfort zone vibe going on here. And she said, do you think Wonder Woman's breasts are real? And he says, right, I'm gone.
Yeah, because they were kind of talking, you know, real quick back and forth, bouncing ideas off of each other and everything. Mm. And he's like, hey, you know, we're working pretty good here together. And she's like, no, we're not. She doesn't want to work real good here together.
No.
All right, so next we cut to almost like maybe memory bubbles.
Plus, I was...
Of conversation.
Is that Midas narrating the memory? Because I was reading it.
It could be. It's him that they're talking about. And that could be where the information is coming from, because he's, after all of this, and we'll get back to what it shows, he's standing on the docks. Standing in the morning sun.
Oh, is that a song?
Oh, it's supposed to be.
Oh.
Why do you always return to that moment, foolish man? So he was thinking about his origin story.
Right.
And I guess those are thought bubbles of him remembering what was said or what was done or whatever. But we have this factory, and we have a laboratory in the factory. And outside of the factory is kind of a toxic chemical cesspool.
Right.
This is also Patton.
Yes, this is like 1964.
And he's been doing some kind of work, scientific work, and he's finally figured it out. And he tells his female contact that he's finally figured it out, which is good, because that's what he was hired to do, was to figure it out.
Look in the third panel.
Mm-hmm.
You see him kind of gesturing over to the side. And a girl, the girl, like, next to him. Do you see that? There's just a random man back there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Midas?
No, I think Midas is the doctor. I think Midas is the doctor, because after he tells her that he's done with his work, you know, he's found everything out, whatever, she forcibly takes it from him with the help of these two goons. And then to make sure to destroy any evidence, to get rid of the lab, to do all that kind of stuff, they blow it up, apparently with somebody in it, because you see him running covered in flames, running into this toxic cesspool waste pool that they have.
Oh, I didn't notice that was a guy.
Yeah, if you look at it, it's a guy running.
Yeah, okay, earlier I thought that it was just shrapnel.
Okay.
But now that you say that, I definitely see like the outline of a guy just running because he's on fire.
And we in the text, we're talking about corporate masters, talking about eco-terrorists, and then there's a reference here, remind you of the Holland incident. Not that he was anywhere close to Holland's genius. Alec Holland was a scientist who, through a very similar circumstance, became Swamp Thing. And so that also is what helped me kind of figure out all of that is what was going on here. Because it's not real definite, it kind of leaves a lot open.
Right.
So.
Well, we don't know if the scientist dude, the doctor dude, is Midas, but I think we can definitely say for sure that the guy on fire was probably him.
I would say, yeah.
Because if it's not him, then there's another dude out here just...
Well, I really think it's him, because she pulled the guns on him, had her goons pull the guns on him, and took, you know, whatever his research was or whatever he had done. And then in the process of trying to destroy any evidence, like that they had done some sort of illegal research, they would have tried to kill him too.
Right.
To get rid of him. So I think that Midas is this scientist dude. And who knows? the chicky here blonde.
Could be Blood Rose.
Could be.
I thought about that.
I don't know, but...
But her eyes are blue, and I don't think Blood Roses are blue.
Something could have happened. Who knows?
Well, at least I don't think they're blue. Let me just keep going, and I'll look.
But we get back to Midas, and he's standing here on the dock. He's left her...
Now they're green.
...to recuperate, and I guess he's, like, going... We don't really know right now. We see where he's going eventually, but we don't really know where he's going.
Boy.
But he's out here on the docks... talking to himself and muttering as he's making his way through the docks and everything.
He looks rough.
Yeah,
he's dripping.
The side view.
And because you can see all the way through his mouth and all he's got there is his
teeth. And, yeah.
And yeah, and he's just leaving, like, he's leaving puddles of stuff like we saw him in the first when he was, like, at that bar
in
place.
The bar, yeah.
And he's just leaving puddles of stuff.
So then we cut back to Q-Core and we see.
He's wearing a trench coat. The doctor was wearing a trench coat.
When he ran out, yeah, his doctor's.
Doctor's wearing a trench coat.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that one, but maybe he's got a thing for trench coats.
Could be. So we're back at Q-Core, and Oliver is done.
I was thinking about the thing. Thing likes trench coats.
Oh, Fantastic Four, mm-hmm. Ben Grimm thing. Different company. We can't talk about that.
I know, but I can throw...
That's Marvel.
I can throw fashionable shout-outs every now and then.
We'll have to do a Marvel podcast. That way you can drop Marvel...
Marvel tidbits
and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
So he's talking to Adrian as they're walking, going to maybe a meeting or something.
I have the perfect name for it.
Okay.
Marvel Bronze Age. Keep going.
Hey, that would be pretty good. And Midas crashes through the window here. We know from past conversations and whatnot that he and, what's her name?
Blood Rose,
are looking for Green Arrow. And they know that he has some kind of connection to this Oliver Queen.
Mm-hmm.
So because of what Green Arrow did to Blood Rose, Midas wants to punish Green Arrow. So he goes to Q-Core looking for Oliver Queen.
Right.
Which he finds, but he also finds that he's with Adrian. So Midas basically takes Adrian hostage and tells Oliver, you can go because I don't want you.
Yeah.
I want her because I know if I have her, Green Arrow will come to rescue her. So you can go away.
Right. Just leave.
So it almost makes you think that he knows
that
this
Oliver
is Green Arrow.
Right.
But if he did... then he would just go ahead and try to kill him then instead of waiting for him to be in costume. What
right.
difference does it make if he's in costume?
It's still Green Arrow. He's just wearing different clothes.
So they don't know that it's the same person. Anyways, Green Arrow runs, Oliver Queen runs, which is probably going to cause a little bit of friction with Adrian when everything's said and done because he runs and leaves her.
Yeah, he just leaves her there with this zombie-dripping toxic waste guy.
Yeah, so... So he runs and tells Chicky,
Naomi
that, you know, he's changing into Green Arrow and everything. So she, you know, she starts monitoring him and is his eyes. So he goes and changes and we see Midas terrorizing Adrian here.
I would throw up. I honestly would. I got this dripping toxic flesh.
It's got a smell, too.
I mean, it really does. Close you know, it can't smell good. Body spray, you know, go axe.
No axe is going to work there,
no.
Baby. No, not even the real thing.
It would probably, like, eat the axe,
yeah.
You know.
So he's telling Adrian basically what he's after in his broken English. And we see this inflatable divider thing pop up between them, pushing them apart, which... Jax introduced to him a couple issues ago as a non-injurious way of non-lethal way of handling people. So now he's got them separate, and he tells Adrian to run, of course, get away.
And what's different about him?
He's got his hood on.
There we go. First issue with Green Arrow having his hood on.
He's got and for those of you that have followed Green Arrow long-term, he's got his Longbow Hunter hood on,
yes.
Which is another aspect of his character that in 15 years of doing the podcast we'll get to. But
right.
It's
why? Well, because we'll be in like 1962 by then?
No, because we'll be in the 1980s by then, which is when Longbow Hunters came out.
15
years, 2 a month, it's 24.
That's 2 years in a year.
And it was kind of a joke. It's I just meant
I'm sorry that I was looking into it too much.
A long way down the road.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you have the books. You can read them any time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So he's pulling down here against Midas, and they're just talking back and forth. Naomi's talking to Green Arrow. Green Arrow's talking to Midas. Midas is talking to Green Arrow.
And then earlier I thought I saw this blob of white crap on the ground, and that the way that the broken glass is, I thought he was saying, yes, definitely territorial.
Yeah, that the
and
blob
I'm like,
was
is that like your mashed potato friend?
Yeah, it's a cast off of him.
That's what drips off of him is gathered there.
Because, you know, as far as the definitely territorial, they were talking about how whenever they got in certain areas that Green Arrow always showed up.
Right.
So he must protect those
certain
areas.
Spots.
Q-Core being one of those. So now they're going at it. Green Arrow is finding out basically that his arrows just aren't working. Naomi is trying to help. She's Googling up all the information she can find on the dude, but there's nothing there because nobody's ever seen Midas before. Also, something interesting about the way that the character is drawn, two-thirds or so of his skull is always exposed from where his skin has melted off of it.
Yeah.
So his head is always topped by some funky kind of skull cap, wherever it is they've drawn it at that particular time, because his skull's exposed.
And I noticed that he has Midas gold eyes.
Makes him look cool. Yes, he does. He's got some kind of energy-ish kind of eyes, and they're gold.
Yeah.
They're always colored gold, yeah. So he throws Green Arrow through the window from the inside of the building to the outside. So now they continue their tussling on the streets out in front of Q-Corps. Still, he's going back and forth with Naomi, you know, basically asking for help. What can I do to stop this dude?
He's just eating my arrows.
Find something about him, you know, help me out with some information here. Meanwhile, he's just flipping any kind of arrow he's got in his quiver at him to, you know, basically he's like, well, does this do it? Does that work? Does it, you know,
how about both of those together?
Yeah, he's just going through them here. Meanwhile, he's running around, you know, trying to distract him and keep him focused on himself. That way Midas doesn't go off somewhere and do something else. And he keeps an eye on him so he knows where he is and can relay where this bad guy is. In the course of their fighting, they trash a car.
He just picks it up, you know. He's just like, here, have a car, and just throws it at him.
Yeah. And it blows up like an old Pinto, but you might not know that reference.
Because the gas tank the gas tank in the bottom in a Pinto?
It was in the very back.
Ah.
And they ran test after test, and it always blew up when it got hit from behind.
Oh, really?
All these people died because of that and all this.
Well, he just you know slammed it out on the ground in the back, so.
And it blew up because the back hit.
Pinto
yeah.
Shout out.
So finally, Naomi tells him that, well, you know, I can't find anything, and this dude looks like he's as tough as Superman, so I would suggest you just run.
Well, she actually does mention Superman,
thanks by the way. For the help,
yeah.
You know, basically. Green Arrow says, well, no, you know, I'm not going to run. We've got to find some way to do something with this dude.
And his teeth are melting in that one that I saw.
Yeah.
It's just like...
He's drawn gross and ugly.
Yeah.
Green Arrow finally tries a toxic arrow. He's got some sort of nerve toxin, and of course the dude just absorbs or melts it like he has done every other arrow. Finally, he gets a hold of Green Arrow and grabs him up, talking to him face to face, talking smack, and part of Green Arrow's armor is melting from Midas's touch. The Midas touch.
The Midas touch, and it's going...
popping and
yeah
as opposed to the sound of gas leaving a meteor into a or a moon into
a jewelry store.
Yeah. So he's telling Green Arrow, giving him what for. Green Arrow's talking about he makes the connection between she and Midas being together.
Blood Rose
and Midas being together.
I've got to get some cue cards over here.
I've got some kind of mental block against that name, Blood Rose. Okay. And then Midas gets all persnickety, says you can't talk bad about her, you can't say that name. And as they're laying there talking, Green Arrow realizes that there's an arrow laying here on the ground that he hasn't used. So he grabs it up and shoves it up through the lower jaw, through the mouth, and into the upper palate of this dude, triggering the arrow, which lets out this horrendous screech, and Midas collapses.
Sonic arrow?
Banshee arrow, which is basically the same thing.
Is that what he calls it?
She does. Naomi calls it Banshee arrow. Good
Oh,
call.
good call. There you
And he's
go.
like, "What do you mean, good call? I just grabbed one up and used
Yeah, it was
it.
just there.
I had no idea what it was." So you see part of his armor here over his shoulder is eaten away.
Yeah.
Did knock Midas out here, and he's kind of, settling down, having a conversation with Naomi over their wireless there, and you see somebody come up behind him and hold a gun to his head. And on the final panel of the book, it's Blood Rose,
There you go.
who is last panel of the book, I had to get it right,
Yeah.
who is holding the gun to his head, basically saying, "Don't move or I'll put one of these in your head." Nice full page picture of she and he standing there, his arms raised and her with the gun to his head. So
Yeah.
that's pretty cool. So,
With the still accurate melted armor stain.
yes.
With the next issue being called Love and Other Four-Letter Words, so that could hint to the Midas Blood Rose.
MIDAS, that's five. Oh, love between the two of them.
Four-letter
Yeah,
words.
it could be. Could be she loves Green Arrow.
Well, what did Naomi say? Is this another angry ex or
Yeah,
something like that?
way back when they first started fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, "Oh, it could be.
I don't
I don't
know.
know." All right, guys. Next up, next episode, we've got lined up Adventure Comics, the 1938 volume, issues 261 and 262,
I was gonna make another Marvel reference.
and
She'll be the Mary Jane to her to his Peter
Peter
Parker.
Parker. Okay, we can't talk about Marvel on this
I
show.
can't
It's
think. He'll be the lowest. He'll no. She'll be the Lois Lane to his Superman. There we
okay.
go. That's DC.
And there was actually a Superman
There
reference
was
in
a
the book,
Superman reference,
so.
so it fits.
The third book for next episode is the sixth issue of this volume of Green Arrow. It should be coming out next week, I believe. No feedback this week. Nothing to talk about on that avenue. But with feedback in mind, if you do want to leave some feedback, there's a variety of ways you can do it for us. One really helpful way would be to leave a review on iTunes. Provided you download it from iTunes.
Yes.
If you don't, then you could leave feedback on Google Plus. We have an Emerald Archer page there.
We also have an Emerald Archer page on Facebook.
You could leave feedback there for us. The website that the shows are hosted on, are posted on, is comicbooknoise.com/EmeraldArcher, one word, Emerald Archer. And then, of course, the old reliable email. If you want to email us, you can email us at earth1, that's the number one, emeraldarcher@gmail.com. So all of those methods are there waiting for your feedback. Do want to thank Mr. Derek Coward for his behind-the-scenes work on the website and loading the podcast and getting everything ready for us. We appreciate that, Mr. Coward. And Nick, unless you have anything else to add here.
I think that pretty much sums it up.
All right, guys, that's all for this episode. Episode 10,
That's 10.
11
11?
is the next one?
11 is the next
Is
one.
the next one.
Thought you were talking about this one.
No, episode 11, hopefully will come your way in a couple weeks. The book's mentioned there, and otherwise we'll see you guys, I guess, in the funny papers. Talk to you next time.
Bye, guys.
This is a Teal production. Thank you.